For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy... All right, we're done.
That was so good, man.
Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 here at Dev Intersection in Las Vegas with John Papa. What do, bud?
Yeah, well, I do a lot of web-related things. So I do client-side, I do server-side, I do full-stack JavaScript and .NET, Node, pretty much everything up and down the boards, and mostly focus on architecture for building modern web apps.
So modern web architecture has certainly changed a lot.
Oh, yes.
So if let's just say I'm coming from ASP.NET MVC, and now I need to do a lot of the JavaScript type thing. Could you give us like a 10,000 foot level of like how to think about it? And then we'll dive in on some specific things if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. So something I like to talk to people about is a lot of companies that I've worked with have this problem. They have a lot of apps that are already written. So they've got these web services, whether they're written in Java or .NET. And even if they're in .NET, maybe some are ASMX, maybe some of them are just DLLs, maybe some are Web API. But do you want to rewrite everything to be ready for the cloud and mobile web? Not necessarily. So it's always not cost effective to do all these things. So what I'd like to look at is how do we take our existing infrastructure and then take new technologies of JavaScript and then make these nice web-enabled experiences or mobile experiences?
I see.
And the way I kind of get there is using things like ASP.NET 5, which is going to RC soon, we're hearing in the roadmap, you can actually use that as like a web API layer. So keep your existing business services where they are, put ASP.NET Web API on top of that, and its job is to orchestrate and aggregate all your backend calls.
Got it.
And it's actually part of your UI. So ASP.NET Web API becomes the guy who says, hey, I answer the question of how do I expose my data that my UI needs it in the way my UI needs it.
I see.
And then you leave your backend systems alone because they might say, they might answer, how do I get all my customers? How do I get all my widgets? How do I get all my whatevers? But your UI only needs this, this, and this. So the Web API can aggregate all those things, pull them together, and then one call to your Angular app, for example, or your mobile app to get all the data it needs.
So that's an interesting approach. It's saying you've already got all these systems in place. Don't throw them away. Put a modern facade on them in the middle with Web API, and then use some modern framework for the front end. You mentioned Angular.
Absolutely.
So clear. Love the middle API approach. But on the client side, there, it turns out that there's a lot of stuff you can do there, too.
It's quite a bit. And one thing I always hear about with client-side frameworks is people are like, well, I don't really feel comfortable putting my business logic on the client. I'm like, I don't either. I don't put that up there.
Yeah.
I don't put business logic in the client in the browser. I put presentation logic up there.
Right, of course.
So we still do MVC, if you wish, to call it their MVStar or whatever, right? We still put our business logic in like ASP.NET on the server or Node, if that's what you choose. And then you can use the client to do your, you know, how do I present the data? I got to go get my data from an API. I've got to present it, maybe put it in a view model, and show it on the screen.
So your Angulars, for example, or your Aurelias, or maybe whatever mishmash you put together, their only job is to get information, show it, take information, push it.
Yeah, and then flow, right? It's the workflow. It's all about the user experience so you can get people in and out of your app without doing page refreshes over and over again.
Sure. So we went to the high level. What framework do you like best? And maybe can you contrast some of the other ones and why you decided maybe to go with Angular 2 for now?
Sure. So right now, I mean, taking a step back, years ago, it sounds like eons ago, right?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago,
yeah.
When I still didn't have hair,
yeah.
I was writing my own frameworks, basically, and Dan Wallin, a friend of mine, called it my Frankenstein framework, where I basically took 10 different libraries and put them together.
Yeah.
We didn't have Aurelias and
there
Angulars.
Was, yeah.
And it worked. But it was hard to maintain. So with Angular 1 specifically, I started getting into the groove of, wow, I can use this one framework to do a lot of my logic, to get my data, to present my data, and it gave me a testable way to produce my apps. Now, what's happened is Angular 1's been out for over 5 years. It sounds weird, but that's like a whole lifetime.
Yeah,
language,
in
you know?
JavaScript years, that's like 80.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And in that time, it's like, you know, new things are coming out, like Aurelia, like React, like Meteor even. And these things are starting to take advantage of ES6 and ES7, so which are being renamed ES2015 and ES2016. And the theme there that's important is the reason they're going to years is they're trying to commit to a yearly release of JavaScript. So with that happens, right from ES5 to ES6, was, to me, the largest language jump we've ever seen in JavaScript.
Of course.
We're getting to classes and things. And what's happening is we can take advantage of things now that we couldn't do 5 years ago. So it was time to say, you know what? We don't need these constructs in Angular 1 anymore. We can redesign it with our learnings from Angular 1 and build something better with Angular 2. And what to me looks even better is we're taking advantage of TypeScript.
Of course.
So you can use TypeScript, ES6, ES5, any of those to write Angular 2.
I see. So I've heard that the Angular 1 jump to Angular 2 jump is pretty significant.
Yes and no.
So let's hear. I'd love your opinion. Obviously, I make demoware. You've made real stuff. I'd love to hear your take on the jump.
So it is and it isn't. And I'll get you into why. It's like that depends answer, right?
Sure.
So if you know Angular 1, if you're an Angular 1 junkie and you've gone through this, the concepts, it's conceptual compatibility.
Okay.
The concepts are really the same. For example, in Angular 1, we had things called directives, which are basically just, you know, things that decorate your HTML and give them functionality. And then we had controllers and views, which were your screens. Well, in Angular 2, the directives and the controllers got combined effectively into a component.
Okay.
Now we have a component, and we're looking at one here on my screen. I have a dashboard component. That would have been, for example, a controller in Angular 1. And then that component can have directives, so I could actually inject other directives to use on that one. Another thing that we had in Angular 1 was something called a service. So we had this thing in Angular 1 called a service, but you could also create a factory, or you could create a provider, or you could create a constant, or you could create a value. There are 5 ways to create a service,
mm-hmm.
and it made people's heads spin. It still makes my head spin. In Angular 2, we don't have any of those. We just have a class. So we've gone from 7 concepts down to 2, a component and just a basic class.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, the things we did are still there. They're renamed in some cases, and they've gotten simpler. There's less of them. And the more important thing is, if you look at this code, do you see the word Angular anywhere in it?
No, you don't.
It's just JavaScript. In fact, it almost looks like C#.
Yeah.
Right? It's just saying, hey, I'm importing, which is like a using statement in .NET. Go get me the mock heroes and go get me the hero class. So if you go look at the hero class inside of Visual Studio Code, it's just my class. It's got an ID and a name. And in my mock heroes, it's just a hard-coded list of heroes, you know, with some funny names in it that me and Ward Build made up.
Nice.
But then everything in here is just, you know, there's a method, and it's just pulling back a promise, and then here's my other method. And promise is something that's built into the ES6 now.
Sure.
So you're not doing any specific what I call Angularisms anymore. And that's intentional by the Angular team.
So to be clear, this is an Angular 2 application that you've made written in ES6.
In TypeScript.
Okay, cool. So that brings up another sort of question. And hopefully, let's do like overview of these two things, and then maybe we can get into like how this thing works and maybe look at it.
Sure.
Clearly, TypeScript doesn't run in a browser.
Yes and no.
So how do you, that's awesome. I love it. Tell us how. I mean, how do you get this from where it is now into a place where a browser can consume it?
Perfect. So there's two ways. The first I don't recommend, but it's great to just see it happen. There's tools called, so our browsers don't support TypeScript. They also don't support ES6 yet fully.
Not all of
them. Some of them do little. Yeah. For example, IE6, listen to me.
IE11. Welcome to 2001, everybody.
Tell me about it. IE11 doesn't have full ES6 support either. Edge does. But the problem we run into is not everything's supported in the browsers. And quite frankly, the world we live in now, we're going to have to transpile. Transpile means using TypeScript or ES6 and then transpiling it down to ES5 for today. But in the future, we're going to have ES7. And maybe the browsers support ES6. So we're always going to be wanting to support something new that the browsers don't have. And the way we do that is through transpilation.
Okay.
It's kind of like taking your .NET code and making an IL.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to do is we can use something called a module loader, like System.js or Webpack. They're two popular ones. And both of these, by default, will let you transpile in the browser with TypeScript or ES6.
Oh, interesting. And so you can actually just sort of push all the TS files out there and then let that, you call them the web...
Webpack and System.js.
System.js, and they'll just transpile it for you or actually load it in runtime and do the thing.
Yeah, now obviously loading it at runtime doing that, even a Hello World app like this, it might take 10 seconds because what's going to happen is it's going to load them up there and now you're telling the browser, transpile everything and load it.
It might not be a smart thing to do.
Great for demoware, but obviously what I'm really doing here is saying on the server I'll transpile, mm-hmm. you know, in like a build process, mm-hmm. and then I'll serve up the ES5 code. So there are tools like TypeScript compiler, and this app is a TypeScript app, so we've got a TypeScript service, and it's more obvious when you start looking at the types that are in here. So here we've got a service that's defined as type hero service, mm-hmm. and a router defined as a type router. That's the advantage of TypeScript. You get these typings, and with the typings, I get tooling, so I can hover over them and see, hey, what is that thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, what is that router? If I click on it, it shows it's coming from this Angular router, then I can hover over him and see, where is that router? Back in the Angular file. So just like you get with .NET and C#, by using TypeScript, you're getting tooling that just blows away anything we've ever had in JavaScript before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was difficult even to know what was going on in a large application sometimes.
It is. And ES6 is great, but to me, if you're going to go to ES6, take the next leap, because ES5 to ES6 is a big leap. But if you go to ES6, learning that and going to TypeScript is like an afternoon.
Right.
There's just not much left to do, because TypeScript adds in things like the types. It mm-hmm. adds in things like generics.
The interfaces.
And interfaces. And they both are adding in, because ES7 is going to have these things called decorators. And that's what this at component is. At component's like an annotation in .NET. It says, hey, you've got this class called dashboard component. I need some metadata for it. The name of the selector in HTML is going to be called my dashboard. And here's my HTML for it, and here's my CSS for it. So it allows you to say this class, while it's just a normal class, it has other things that go along with it.
Oh, this is interesting. And so eventually in Angular 2, a dashboard component is going to render something in a div or a span or something.
Yes.
But you're going to give it the idea of my dashboard so that CSS can work with it with this particular style.
Right. And you can see here's my dashboard component. It's just an H3 with some divs in it. And this is the Angular code. I have a loop in NG4 uh-huh. saying looping hero for heroes. I'm only getting the first four using a slice.
Sure.
And when I click on it, I'm going to a function called go to detail. And that's it, and it just prints out the hero name. It's very simple to show. But now what I can do is in another HTML page, I can just create a tag, and I'll just mock it up here real quick. So let's say we had a tag in an HTML page. I would say, oh, okay, just if I want to use this guy, I just put in a dashboard, and I can't spell because I'm in JavaScript here.
That's right.
And I do that. And I would literally take that code and put it in my HTML file, and it would invoke this component and with the HTML, the CSS, and everything.
Interesting.
So it's a way of creating your own elements, per se. And that's what we do here. So here's some HTML. I could literally go and say, all right, there's my HTML. Now if I do that, that dashboard will show up in that spot. So we're getting the advantage of taking all this stuff and kind of using classes and JavaScript. But you had asked about transpilation.
Uh-huh.
So let's say we've got this TypeScript. How do I get that to ES5?
Uh-huh.
Let me first show you what Visual Studio Code will do for you. I'm going to hit Command, comma, or this is under Preferences. And then over here, you can see on the right, these are my user preferences. Notice I'm excluding any files that end with JS when the base name of the same file has a TS. What I really want is over here, I've got like hero TS, dashboard component TS. If I have a TS file, I'm not showing the JS, because if I do that, I got a lot of files.
Right.
Watch what happens when I comment that out and I get rid of the comma. And after a moment, it'll save the file. And over on the left, you can see I've got a matching file for every one of those. Now we're able to see there's dashboard component. Let me do this. Dashboard component, JS, and TS side by side. So now here is the TypeScript on the right, and there's the JavaScript that it transpiles to that will run inside of a modern browser.
Interesting.
So we've transpiled from TypeScript to JavaScript using the TypeScript compiler.
So that's interesting. The other challenge that I have when looking at these things is how do I organize these things?
Oh, yes.
And it just feels like, because I mean, I don't know, and I talked to Dan Wallin earlier about this, like I have the author syndrome where I have this white sheet of paper and I structurally know there's a sort of an MV star or thing happening, but where do I put everything? How do you organize things?
So let me get back to where we were for a second just so I can show you. All right, so we're going to comment those back in so I don't see all the messy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now here's my app. Now if I look at a larger version of this app, let's go ahead and open a new version of code, pop it up, and we'll do this on the fly. I've got a version called There and Back Again because I like Lord of the Rings.
Sure.
And here's an app. Oops. And I'll zoom that in. We'll close the window. Notice here what I've done is inside my app folder, I've broken things down to different sections. So let me close those up just to show you one by one. The The way I think about this is my root of my app, I've got an app component. Mm-hmm. That's like the entry point. My app component's like where my shell, my layout, my menus are. Router links are like menu links. Mm-hmm. And the router outlets, where's my stuff gonna go? Like when I click a link, that's where it should appear, right below the menu.
Okay.
So that's the main thing I load. And then I've also got this route config, which shows me here's all the routing I have. For example, when I go to slash in the address bar, I'm gonna load a dashboard component. When I go to binding 123, I'm gonna load the binding component, which is a terrible name. Why don't I just rename that? There we go. And we got characters, and we also have parameters, like detail, colon, then one, uh-huh. for example. So this defines all of our pages. And then, as you might have guessed, see we have a characters. Over here on the left, I've got a folder for the feature called characters.
I see.
And in there, I've got the HTML, I've got its CSS, and its TypeScript.
And hidden behind it is the JavaScript one that's being hidden.
Exactly.
Got it.
So if I did that same trick, you'd see the JavaScript file for this guy. And then the way you transpile this is you could actually go up and you can use it through code, or we could go out to, let's say, let's open a new tab, let's go out, let's go into this folder, and we'll do into, was this there and back again? There's my folder. What I can run is I have a command. I can use the TSC compiler that says, run the compiler, P is project, everything under the source folder, because I have a source folder over here, mm-hmm. so I don't get my node modules. Mm-hmm. And I run that, and it should transpile all my TypeScript into JavaScript. So now, if I did a folder over here, for example, let's just prove that this worked. We'll come over here and we'll show the JavaScript again. There it is, so now we should see them appear. Now I'm gonna delete this characters component, the JavaScript version of it, and I'll delete the map file. Yes, go away. And looks like there's an extra one. So I just have those three root ones, right? So now let's go back into here and I'll run that command again and you should see the JavaScript appear on the left-hand side.
Nice.
So running that command, it'll automatically do it, and you can obviously automate this through a build process.
So here's a question I have, and we'll get to the build process thing in a second. Mm-hmm. What does the map file do?
It's great. So let me answer that in telling you why it exists. Okay. So we've got a TypeScript file. We just said before that the browser has no idea what this is,
yeah.
right? So when I load this in the browser, you're not gonna see the TypeScript, you're gonna see the JavaScript. You're gonna see this. Mm-hmm. Well, if I put breakpoints in there, I don't want a break on this. I want a break on the TypeScript version of it.
Oh, I see.
So for debugging, this map file says, hey, when I generated this, in the browser when you run the JavaScript, when you do a breakpoint, it's gonna use that map file to load the TypeScript and let you debug through the TypeScript.
Okay.
So the mappers are simply just a great way to do live debugging for your application.
So let's go back, because I wanna get to the build stuff too, but we talked a little bit about the structuring. It feels like, because this is different than maybe we would structure something in ASP.NMVC, mm-hmm. because in ASP.NMVC, we usually structure things like, here are the controllers, here are the models,
yes.
here are the views. It feels like now, instead of a horizontal sort of slice, we're doing a vertical slice into like, here is this part of the application.
You just got into my exact talk that I just got done doing.
Oh my goodness.
Number one pattern that I like to follow, and it's trying to connect on Google, obviously, uh-huh. is for structure. And this follows for Angular 1 or 2. Normally, you see what you have on the left, right? Here's uh-huh. your controllers, here's your views, here's your services. That works fine, but when you have a lot of stuff, imagine you have 50 controllers or components.
It starts to become a mess.
Yes, and the worst case is, let's say you're building a dashboard. If I have to go work in the dashboard, I'm working in the controller, and I'm also looking for the view. Now let's say I have 50 views and 50 controllers. I now have to open two folders, each with 50 files, and it's just hard to get back and forth. Mm-hmm. So I like to go by feature, which is more of a, okay, if I have a dashboard, I'm gonna put all my stuff in the dashboard feature, all my stuff in the people feature, whatever you're building. Mm-hmm. And that way, because the browser doesn't care, right?
No, it doesn't.
It's all about how you can work best. So I like to organize it by feature because it helps me navigate quickly. Dan's actually the one who came out with this. He's like, you know, the browser could give a hoot
yeah.
about how you organize it because it's going to combine it and compile it and send one file up.
You know, and I've spoken with Jimmy Bogard, you might know him. He talks a lot about doing that. He does that in ASP.NMVC too.
Yep.
Because when it all comes down to compilation, it doesn't care.
Who cares?
Yeah. And so that's interesting. All right, so let's get into the actual build of the thing because, I mean, let's just say I'm debugging, right? And I want to debug this thing as I'm going through. How do you make it so that you get, because you don't want to run the TSC all the time and then mm-hmm. and then look at it in the browser. Is there a way to actually sort of?
There's a couple of ways. So, and just to first show the debugging side, I just ran a command over here, and we'll mm-hmm. look at what command in a moment, to run the app. This is the tour of heroes. It's actually an Angular 2 demo that's on the Angular 2 site. So if I go look in the browser, and we'll zoom this in because that's way too small for me even to see. Mm-hmm. We go him over there. We look at our network. I'm going to refresh. You can see all the files coming across. These are the root files. Notice it's bringing across JavaScript, not TypeScript. But now let's go to sources. Let's say I want to debug this. Look at the source. It's TypeScript. So I can actually set a breakpoint here on this init right there. Let's refresh it. And I'm going to break on the TypeScript. This is that mapping file that shows me, hey, what am I actually getting? What's Heroes? Right now, Heroes is undefined. But I can step over this one line, and now I can look at Heroes, and I'm going to see an array, which has nothing in it yet.
Right.
But it shows you how you can actually walk through this, and you actually get some pretty cool stuff, like look at your locals window. You see what's on there. Those are private variables. There's a public one. You can also see what happens as you change, like as it goes through it, and you can debug and step into other functions.
Now, is this something you can do remotely as well?
Remotely. You mean like if the code was on another server?
Yes.
Yes. So if the, as long as the map files are enabled, if you're like looking at your desktop and the server's elsewhere, mm-hmm. Like on some real server, if the map files are enabled, you can debug into this and step through.
So generally, you don't want to have your map files enabled on the server, or do you? Is there a case for
That's
either?
That's a preference. I mean, because the way it works is it's supposed to say at the bottom of the JavaScript file, and actually I can show you real quick, okay. At the bottom of the JavaScript file, you'll see that line of code right there. It says, hey, this is JavaScript, but the source map is located here.
Okay.
So it points to that, but it won't load the other files until you actually need them.
Okay.
So you're not weighing down your site.
Got it. So this is super interesting. So we went and stepped in, we looked at the debugging, mm-hmm. we talked about the map file, but now what I'm looking for is, okay, I have this application and I want to be able to get into this tight loop of feedback, I make yep. a change, I look at it. How do you do that? Is there something that helps do these things for you, or
Absolutely.
Do you have to run a bunch of commands?
This one has a very simple one. I'll show you the simple one, and then I'll show you the more advanced one, which is wicked cool. So on this one, we're using a very simple build system, not even gulp or grunt. We're just using npm. Remember I was typing that tsc-p
right.
command? Well, let's say I want to type that. What I can do is say, in the script section of my package JSON, this comes with your project, mm-hmm. I added one called tsc. So when I run this tsc command, it's going to run that command.
Okay,
so
which is the
I have to run all those
translation,
other
yeah.
flags. So let's do that. Let's clear that out, and I can type in, what was it called? I already forgot. See, I can't remember nothing. npm run, and then anything in there will run after that. So I could say npm run tsc.
Okay.
It's running it, it compiled it, and now it's watching for file changes because that's what the dash w does. So now,
anytime you make a change,
yep, I come back over here to the bootstrap file, and let's just come in here and, I don't know, we'll do var x equals 1. And we do that, it should pick it up. It should pick it up. Oh, this is a different project. I'm in a different folder.
If it picks it up, that would have been like a miracle.
That would have been pretty
like
awesome.
Your very next demo would have exploded your machine because the demo gods favored
you. It knows by osmosis.
Yeah.
So now in here, we could say var x equals 1. This is the right project. And there we go. So I picked it up over on the right-hand side, and it recompiles. And I could do that and move forward. The advantage of using npm scripts, which, let's go look at that, is by not having to remember all these flags. And then also, I've got one called start. So start is cool, because I can say npm start, and it's actually running a program called live server, and it says open it at this folder. Now, what this will do is it'll launch it in the browser for me. And if I run that with tsc in another window, every time I make a change over here, let's do this. Let's not talk about it. Let's do it, John.
Let's do it.
Gotta love coding on the fly. So this tab is watching for changes. This tab's running the website.
Uh-huh.
So now, let's go back over here. Let's run our browser on the right-hand side. Yes, that's Satori Heroes. And now let's actually change a file. We'll go into our dashboard, wherever the heck that went. We'll change something here. And I'm just gonna put a file, like a var x equals 1 again. And I'll do that. To actually put it in a bad place. And over on the right-hand side, it should detect the file change, and it reloads it.
Nice.
So now you've got code on the fly, recompile to TypeScript, launch it in the browser.
And obviously we're in a laptop, but if you have a couple of screens, you literally make the change,
yes.
watch it load, that wasn't it. Maybe F12 tools into your browser tool of choice. And so you have this really tight feedback loop.
You do.
And the cool thing is if you're really segregating by feature, the files that you have to change are all next to each other.
Yes, and it makes it a lot easier, and you can get even fancier. So I did a gulp course or a session earlier mm-hmm. this week. let's go look at that one in Visual Studio Code.
So what is Gulp? Just a little quick primer on Gulp.
Oh, you want to assume nobody knows what it is. You're a smart guy. So Gulp is awesome. It answers the question of how do I make all the monotonous stuff that I do normally go away? It helps us build, like it'll do the TypeScript compilation, it'll do the launching of the server. It'll also minify our code for us. Basically, all the monotonous stuff we normally do, it'll help make it faster and automated. But it does something even better.
Okay.
So this is a Angular 1 project, but you can do this with Angular 2. And I have a gulp file. And for example, in here, you're seeing when I go for production, I actually want to inject all my files into the template. What does that mean, John? So let's look at our app. Let's not type strange characters. Okay. Why is it typing that? Here, let's just do it this way. So we've got our app over here. Let's go to the index.html. How many times have you created a web page and you have to type all these things in? You create a new file and you have to put your JavaScript script tag in and you forget to do it.
Yeah.
Or the order matters sometimes and it's a pain in the butt.
And then you're like, why isn't this working? And you spend all day on forgetting that.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's delete it and make somebody cry. I just deleted all my JavaScript. You know what? I'm using jQuery and Angular. Let's delete that too. I don't want that anymore. Notice I've got these tags in here. These little comments, I'm going to make my gulp process look for those, scan all my files automatically, and inject them in the proper sequence. So let's watch this happen.
Oh my goodness.
Let's make this guy go back off to the left. I'm in this project, and we're going to see it over here. So I'm going to say gulp, and I forgot the name of the task. It's not capitals, John. There we go. And then it's gulp inject. Yep. So I'm going to type gulp inject. It's going to run through, wire them all up, and look at the left-hand side.
Oh my goodness.
No longer do I have to worry about, oh my gosh, I've got all these files. And I put spaces in there because I probably had a space earlier. Uh-huh. So you see that, we can actually get rid of that. Instead of leaving that space, let's delete it. And let's rerun it again. And now we'll get it without the spaces.
Here's the interesting thing though, because right away I was like, oh no, it's probably going to repeat what's in here again.
Yep.
But it didn't. It was even clever about how it did that.
It's smart enough to do that. And even, see the build one?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make a single file out of those later. So if I run gulp build, let's actually put it at the top. I think it's build. We'll find out. This one takes longer because I'm doing more stuff. I'm actually not just injecting, but I'm running unit tests and a bunch of other things. And now I'm injecting one file. So I'm taking all those files, combining them into one, injecting one file into that spot. Now it didn't do it to this file, but instead, because I wanted to change this in a distribution folder, it actually put it up into my build folder. And you'll see this index file. So this one here, notice I just got two files now. And notice they have hashtags on them too, so I get cache busting.
So the cool thing about this, holy cow, because I mean, I know you, and I'm speechless because like so many things is going through my head, but let me start with the first thing. When you are building websites and you literally have 15 JavaScript files you have to download, there's a network issue.
There is.
On. And so this is actually fixing that.
Yep.
But not only is it fixing that, it's letting you still, when you're in the dev environment, still have everything out.
Exactly.
And then build everything out to another folder even.
Right. You got environments for the builds, one for dev and one for production. And the build one, you saw that took like 8 or 9 seconds, but the dev one was instant.
Yeah.
Because I don't need to combine them and minify them and all the other stuff. Now, for development everyday life, this is even better. So I have this command called gulp serve dev. It's basically like the npm start. It'll do the minimal possible things I need to do to run my app, which is effectively inject the scripts and launch it. So I do that. It's going to launch it in the browser, which you'll see over there. Now, let's go over here, make sure I'm in the right project again, and let's pull up my styles less. Let's say I made a change. So I got this guy side by side. Let's say you really hate orange. What's your favorite color?
Oh. Cocoa. C-O-C.
I heard you say pink, actually.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, I didn't know. Oh, nice.
And look how it instantly compiled the less to CSS and injected that over here. So you can change. Let's say it's really not pink. You like brown. You said cocoa.
That's right.
Boom. And that looks red, but it's brown.
This is amazing.
So it goes blue. But it's great because you instantly get these changes. And the cooler thing is, watch this. You need to do testing on Firefox sometimes. Let's say, imagine I had like 20 browsers open.
Mm-hmm.
Let me copy that over here. We'll go to localhost 3000. And now watch what happens when I go to customers.
Oh, so now you can see the same thing in like 5 different browsers to make sure that everything is working. And you can even put Chrome up and put it to like, oh, let's pretend you're a phone, right? And then you can have regular Chrome up. And then you can have Edge up and all the other ones on.
Yes, and even scrolling, like when I scroll one or the other when they're this big, so let's refresh, and I refresh that browser, I'll refresh this browser, and when I can do it, I can synchronize the scrolling so it stays the same, I can synchronize the back. Once you refresh, the link's broken. Mm-hmm. But you can open this up in multiple browsers. You can also do like one browser in Chrome here. You could open up another one. Let's copy this for a second. Let's go over there. Let's pull this off. And let's make him be mobile phone. So now we'll refresh that guy. You could actually get these guys in sync and have one for phone view, one for a regular browser, check your responsive design. It's pretty cool on how many things you can actually inject using Gulp.
So let's get into Gulp, and before we do, Gulp versus Grunt. They're the similar things, but they're just, in my brain, one is better than the other because you can do functions, the other is more like a declarative kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay.
I think if you're a developer, you like Gulp better.
Okay.
If you're a CI/CD person who just wants to change config to make it work, that's Grunt. Mm-hmm. It's not better or worse really so much as it is what kind of a person are you.
Okay.
I like Gulp because it's easier, quicker, and it actually is faster than Grunt because it doesn't use file I.O. It does all in memory. But let's say we're in here and we were looking for that method I just talked about. Browser sync is the name of this. Let's go find him. I think this is him. Yeah. So we called serve. We're going to launch it up using Node. NodeMon, that's the Jamaican version of Node.
Nice.
So, just kidding. That's this monitors Node and restarts. But it's calling this browser sync function. So I've got this start browser sync. Let's see what he does. What he's doing is using a tool called Browser Sync, which sounds like Browser Link from Microsoft, but it's actually something different. It'll create a simple web server, launch it in the browser, and watch file changes so it injects those changes, and it does all that stuff we just showed. And I'm checking, if I'm in dev mode, I want you to watch the less files, and when they change, compile them to CSS. Mm-hmm. If I'm not in dev mode, if I'm in production mode, you need to watch the less, the JavaScript, the HTML, all of it, and reload. And then here's my options. I'm being very explicit on these just to show what they are. Here's the port I'm running on. These are the files that it'll watch. Ghost mode is how it tracks. So when I click on something in the one, it'll emulate it in the other four or five browsers. Do you want to track the location? I said no. The forms, like if there's HTML forms in there, it'll track what you do in the different form validation. Scrolling, if it's a long page, it'll scroll all of them at the same time. So you can see how you can configure this to help you debug your own apps running locally.
So I'm trying to see, maybe I'll pick your brain on this on the feedback loop. You start your Angular. By the way, you have a good starter project. Is it Hot Towels? You
Hot
still
Towel.
Do that?
Yep.
It's a starter project for your Angular 1 or 2 app?
It's a 1 app for now.
Cool. And so eventually maybe there'll be one for 2. Mm-hmm. You download that to get started. Is it going to have the Gulp file and all that stuff in there?
It does. I give everybody the Gulp file. You don't have to use it if you don't want to, but I figure why not?
Sure.
Free automation is kind of nice.
Yeah, no joke. And so then as you're developing, you use Gulp and you do the dev thing. You bring it up, you make your changes, you get a good feedback loop. And then later on, if there's some other stuff you need to add, you can modify the Gulp file to do the kinds of things you need it to do.
Yeah, and you can change it and tweak it. And usually what people do is they'll change it almost instantly to deal with like where their folders are. If you have a slightly different structure, what I do with my Gulp file, and I'll show you real quick, is I have a Gulp config. So I still have config, and in that config I set like, what's my browser reload delay? So I set that to 1 second. And the reason I do that is when I'm making changes, if I'm typing a lot and I have autosave on, I don't want those changes to be like refreshing the browser every time I type a stroke. I make it wait a second. That's why it was a slight delay when I changed them. But there's other settings too, like where do I keep my modules? Where do I keep my JavaScript? What order do I want to inject? I want anything with the word module first, and then the rest of the JavaScript, because that's important for Angular. Where are my fonts located? This is still config, but then my Gulp file takes these values in, and this is the only thing you really should have to change. The Gulp file works for everybody. This is where did you put your stuff?
I see.
And the other thing we get to do, too, is that browser sync. Let's say you write unit tests, which everybody should.
Yeah.
Why am I in caps lock? That's crazy.
It's because you're really excited about Gulp, man. You got to say
so
it loudly. Gulp!
We should yell it.
Yeah, Gulp.
So we're going to run Gulp serve specs. I think that's what it's called. Let's run Gulp and find what's happening. Oh, I'm in the wrong project. How did I get out of there? CD Gulp patterns. There we go. Now we'll run Gulp. It shows me a list of my commands. Serve specs. So let's say I'm running unit test. And there we go, serve specs. What this guy will do is launches not my app, but it launches my spec runner. So now over here, we'll make that a little smaller so you can see it. It ran all my tests, 54 passed, and I can see all my tests and I can click on them. Now, let's say that I wanted to write code and put this on a different monitor. Mm-hmm. So over here, I could come back into my app, I could change my JavaScript dashboard controller, and let's say I had a test to check to see, hey, it's when it does this log, it's supposed to print it off. Instead, I could say, hi, Seth. And when I change that, it reruns my tests over on this side, and it'll show me the results. So if I had a test that checked that, it would actually fail that test. If I had a test checking the title, we can put in foo, it would fail it over here. So whatever we ended up having, it would show, like, this is a failure now.
Mm-hmm.
Now notice I can scroll down, and eventually, it says foo should have equaled dashboard.
Nice.
Not a great test, but it shows you the reasoning behind this.
Well, this is awesome. So I've never done unit testing for JavaScript. I don't write a lot of JavaScript mm-hmm. thing. Can you maybe walk us through? I think you were using, what was the name of the testing framework you were using?
This one's using Mocha. Mocha and Jasmine are the two most popular ones out there. Honestly, the syntax is like 99% similar, so there's really no reason to care which one it is. In Mocha, you'll say things like to be defined right there on line 22. In Jasmine, close your eyes. Okay, there we go. Same thing in Jasmine would look just like that.
I see.
So if you're using Jasmine, you've got this camel case. In Mocha, you've got dots. Whatever, right? It's about the same thing. But here what I'm saying is, all right, we describe a test. It's called dashboard. And before every test, I want to go get this module. That's my Angular set of code. And I'm going to inject in, I need my controller, Q is for promises, Angular has this thing called scope for binding, and I need my own data service. I'm going to get all four of those. And then I'm going to stub out my data service, saying replace the real data service with this thing that gives me mock data.
Okay.
So that way it's not actually using it. I'm really just testing the controller. Then I create an instance of my controller. And then in my other describe, I say, hey, this controller should be created successfully, and I'll just make sure that it exists.
Yeah.
That's my like litmus test. And then after activate, I'm checking to see, did it have a title? Did it have at least one customer? Did it have five customers?
And this is interesting because, again, I mean, we're sticking to the principle of these tests are in this folder for this feature.
Yes. And notice I keep my specs in that folder. So right next to the controller, I have a spec file. I also have a routing file. This is my actual routes for Angular 1. And right next to it, I've got a spec file to tell me how do I test those routes worked. So every one of my feature folders has stuff in it, like my customers. You'll see I've got customer details and customers, all with their own specs.
Cool. And so to run the test, you're using gulp to sort of run all the tests. And can you show us that gulp
sure.
task?
Let's see if I can find it. It would be under serve specs. Serve specs runs serve. And then under serve, we'll just go find him. We've got a couple places that call it. Down below, let's see. Browser reload. Where's the specs part? Let me just look for Mocha. Actually, it's running Karma. There we go. Start tests. So Mocha is the testing framework. Karma, his job is how do you automate running the tests?
Okay.
So Karma like runs the test for you. So I run this Karma server. I get it out of Node. And then I say, okay, if I'm starting this up, I'm going to go ahead and save it with these ports, just setting my ports. And Karma start is simply, where's the Karma file, which just points to your code. Do you want to exclude any files? Sometimes you don't want to run certain tests.
Sure.
And then do you want to do a single run or not? And this is like a watcher. So do you want to run it once and be done, or do you want to run it and keep it running?
Oh, I see. Kind of. Yeah, I see.
So that just starts it up. And then what I have is a little function that, you know, when it's done, I run this on when it's done and say, hey, I'm shutting it down, or did the test fail? And I kind of print out what happened.
Got it.
So I can actually run these from the command line too. If we run this over here, if I run gulp again, I got a control C, sorry. I think it's called gulp test. Yep, right there.
Cool.
All right, so we run gulp test. And the same thing I ran in the specs, we're now running here. Now the problem here is, remember that one test failed?
Yep.
This is harder to read than what was in the browser.
Yeah, of course.
Now imagine you had, I have 54 tests on a small app. Imagine you had 5,000 tests and you were trying to scroll through the output.
Yeah.
This is why I like having the browser view, because it's a little easier to see it.
Sure. And how do you enable the browser view? Is it another gulp task?
Yeah, that one was gulp serve specs. If you can spell, you can use gulp.
Yeah.
So when I do that, it loaded the browser view.
Got it.
And it shows me the error right down there.
And that the browser view is something that already comes bundled with Karma?
No, it's actually taking advantage of running Karma and Browser Sync, that other tool that launched the app.
Okay.
So when I wrote this, actually Ward Bell and I were doing this, I was using Browser Sync to load my app so I could code and see like the colors change. And I was using Karma to run the tests. And Ward and I were sitting there one day, and it was his idea actually. He's like, why don't we combine these and make it easier to see our tests running? There's no reason you can't run the test in the browser.
Sure.
So this way it's running them right there and we can see it, and it's a heck of a lot easier. And all this indentation, that's, I'm in a dashboard feature, and all those describe statements I showed, just print these out.
So what is this, my question I guess is, where is this markup coming from?
Ah, so let's go back here. And we have a specs HTML. And in the specs HTML, we've loaded, I'm using injection again. Mm-hmm. Notice I never have to add them here either. It loaded all my Bower files, it injected all my JavaScript, and it puts them all in order. Notice it's injecting additional things, more than our index HTML, because now I've got to load in the actual specs.
Right.
So every time I write a spec file, it automatically puts it in here. And then at the bottom, this is what runs the tests. It uses this little thing called Bard, which is just a library Ward and I wrote, which turns on debugging, and then it runs the Mocha runner.
Ah, and then you're getting all of the events back and then rendering up. Okay.
And Mocha will show them in the browser for you.
That's fantastic.
So we're taking advantage of a lot of different technologies to kind of make life easier. The good news is if you get Hotel, all this comes with it, which is one of the reasons I like doing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Hotel, I think it's called JPOP. I can't spell my own name, Seth.
It's one of those days, man.
It is. JPOP, Yo Hot Towel, I think is the short link.
So it's a Yeoman, there's a Yeoman generator for it as well, then?
Yes. We're having internet connection issues. But if you go there, jpop.me/YoHotTowel, uh-huh, you'll find the Yeoman generator. And literally, it's my favorite Yeoman generator, not because I wrote it, but because there's no options. You know, sometimes you run a generator.
And you're like, oh, what do I choose? It's, again, one, the white paper problem.
You get one question. What's the name of the app? And then it just gives you the app. So, and at that point, you can change it. You can throw it away if you want, but at least it gives you an idea of how all these things will run. And simply, if I go to a new tab, and let's go into Play folder. Always create one of those. I have a little command here. We'll call it Seth. Creates a folder called Seth. I can run Yo Hotel, because I've already installed it. And it will run this. Ah, I've got a bug, so I've been changing my features on it.
Oh, that's what happened. Yeah.
Run it and just install the whole app.
That's awesome, and it puts it right into, and it even looks like it starts to run it, too. Oh,
yeah,
no, that's the web page.
That's the web page.
That's right.
But it creates basically what we saw with this gulp patterns, and you'll get out of the box, you'll see a bunch of folder files, you won't get that, and that. You'll get an app that's basically got two features, a dashboard, and I think I give you customers out of the box. Maybe it's Avengers, because I like Avengers.
Sure, sure. And so that's just a really good way to say, to avoid the I don't know how to start problem.
That's the hardest part in dev, isn't it?
Yeah,
I'm on a white blank screen in Visual Studio. What do I do next?
Especially with applications like these, because these applications, what you've done is you've taken together Angular. You've got Gulp going on. You've got Karma, Mocha going on. You also have got
TypeScript.
And so there's so many things that you sort of have to put together that if you miss a step or don't do it right, you're kind of going to be looking at it for a while.
You will, and it's hard. You know, Angular's one thing, right? You get your Angular app running, but when you actually want to go to production, you want all the other stuff I'm showing.
Yeah.
And figuring out the right ones to use and how they work together is not easy. So I've taken our learnings, you know, Dan Wallin, Ward Bell and I, and some other friends of ours, figured out what's the best easy path? You know, what's the easy button to get people moving? This way, they can literally install it, and within seconds, they can type commands in, like, just type gulp. You'll see the commands you get. Oh, okay, I can run gulp test. I've got one called gulp vet, which I always show people. That's like run JS hint on my code. Make sure I don't miss any semicolons or things. And it's fine. It has no issues. But if I come in here and let's screw up my code. I love breaking code.
Yeah, let's break it.
So, and we'll do that. Are we actually looking at the right project? Yes. That was funny before. I got rid of the semicolon. Now let's go over here and run gulp vet. And it should tell me, John, you're dumb, you forgot a semicolon. And it tells you exactly where it is. And I can go back over and say, all right, put my semicolon in, run my gulp vet again, and it should say, now you're good.
That's awesome. So now I understand. I had seen Hot Towel before, but I conceptually knew what it might be, but now I'm realizing how much is packed in there.
Yeah.
It might be better just to start with something you know will work.
Yeah, and obviously you're not going to want your app to look like I did. The actual screens in Hotel are not the important part.
No.
It's how it's built and how it's structured, so then you can rip my screen out and put your own stuff in.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for spending some time. Sure. You answered a lot of my questions. This is actually very useful. And if you're watching and you're wanting to get started with Angular, you could totally do it. When can we expect sort of an Angular 2 kind of hot towel type thing?
Let's go take a look. There's one. Oh, are we not on the internet? Let's see here. I was on, this one was already open, so we're lucked out. There is, in the Angular docs, there is a Angular 2 Tour of Heroes tutorial, which I wrote with the Angular team. And there's going to be five parts to it. Two of them are now published. But you can see step by step how to create an Angular 2 app. And it kind of walks you through. You've got these heroes. You know, how's it going to work? And it talks to you about, you know, what those heroes will do. I forgot I'm not on the internet. Shouldn't go to another page. But this will walk you through there. And then we're starting to work on what's that generator going to look like.
Okay.
How do you get out of the gates nice and easy?
And by generator, you mean the Yeoman generator to get started?
Yeoman generator. And the other part is there's a style guide that I put together for Angular 1, which is actually, I just found out recently, a buddy of mine told me, it's in the top 100 GitHub repos out there. So it's very well looked at, and it's got over 118 contributors
in
9 different languages. And this kind of gives you an idea of how do you write your Angular code.
You know, awesome.
How do you write controllers? How do you write services? And it's a good way to get started after you've learned the basics to say, how do I structure my app?
So we got a fire hose. Looks like we got a way to compartmentalize the fire hose a little bit. Thanks so much for your help, bud.
Hey, no worries, Seth. Thanks for having me.
How do you like Dev Intersections, by the way?
It's great. I love that it's like 2-in-1. You got Dev Intersections, you got angle brackets, and the conversations in the hallway are the best part for me.
Of course. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us, bud. We're here in Las Vegas for Dev Intersection. John Papa, thanks for being with us. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.